Join us as we gather around the hedge, where we dig into technology, business, and culture with the finest minds in computer networking.
Well, hello, Tom. We're still missing the dinosaurs. You need to move them. That's just all there is to it.
Yeah, they're out of sight, but they're thinking of you, Russ.
But now the plant is not looking too good.
No, the plant's healthy. Yeah, no, the plant's happy.
Oh, okay.
And it's offended that you're saying that about it.
And today we have with us, who is this guy, Tom? Oh, Ethan Banks. Do you know them?
I heard of him once or twice.
Yeah.
Hey, Russ and Tom, how are you doing?
Obviously off in dad joke territory today,
Ethan. I mean, way off. Before we even hit record, you were hitting dad jokes when I heard Russ. Oh, boy. In fairness, I am making a guest appearance on The Hedge, but I am not the guest, Russ. You're the guest, aren't you?
Wow. I don't know. Ethan comes on my show and he turns the tables on me.
Well, the context, Russ, is you were saying, hey, you should come on The Hedge sometime. And I said, oh, I'm interested in the Internet Architecture Board because you're on it now. And I don't know much about what the Internet Architecture Board is all about. So maybe that's worth talking about. And you said, okay. And so here we are.
So I don't know if I can talk about this. It's all smoke-filled back rooms.
Oh, good. Well, that's a great subject for a podcast then. let's see if we can get Russ in trouble. We got 45 minutes. See how much trouble we can get Russ into.
Well, let's start at the very beginning, Russ. What is the Internet Architecture Board, the IAB? Give us the 10,000 foot view.
So originally, way, way back when the internet was young and the IETF was young, there was a felt need for a group that would guide the overall architecture and architectural principles, guard the architectural principles of the internet, things like the end-to-end principle and stuff like that. Because while the ISG was around, the ISG was not seen as the repository or the guardian of those things. Now, that's changed over time. Of course, the IESG does as much about internet architecture as the IAB does, I would say, today. But the IAB does still a lot of internet architecture stuff, looking at, well, we can talk about projects if you want to give people a sense of some of the stuff that the IAB is working on. But it's more an informal role of doing workshops, getting people to talk about things. And also the IAB serves as the nexus of the liaisons. In fact, I was just on a 2-hour meeting with the IETF leadership and the IEEE leadership talking about, oh, the IEEE is doing this? Huh. Well, the IETF has a working group that kind of does that too. Maybe we should have people talk to people.
What's the relationship between these, like hierarchically, where does it fit? Where does IETF, IAB, IEEE, maybe to some extent, how do they relate to each other?
Well, the IEEE is, of course, a different standards organization, or SDO, Standards Development Organization, than the IETF. The IEEE is really focused on layer 2 and physical and electrical technologies and stuff like that. Although, you know, there are some places where things overlap in terms of MAC addresses and standardization of addressing and stuff like that. The IETF is primarily made up of the IETF itself, which is the working groups, the individuals who play in those working groups. Then you have areas, and each area has area directors. The area directors make up what's called the Internet Engineering Steering Group, the IESG. And so that's not, it's not exactly hierarchical. I mean, it's not exactly like the working group chairs do kind of report to the IESG or to the ADs specifically, but it's not quite that clear cut. The working groups are also vetted by the IAB with periodic reports, and all the new BOFs that come along that may or may not become working groups are both vetted through the IAB and shepherded by the IAB, by IAB members. So I'm shepherding a couple of BOFs right now that are potentially coming up. It's an interesting position because you don't always have to agree with the premise or the charter of the BOF to make it into a working group. Your job as an IBM member is just to shepherd it, to say, these are the hard questions you're going to get. Go answer these questions before you come back.
As I was reading about the IAB, Russ, to prep for this, it felt like there was a lot of coordinating activities. You know, people who know a lot about the history and background about what's going on with the internet and with standards development and who know a lot of other people in other organizations seem to coordinate things both formally and informally. You said it's not, you know, it's not overly formal, but there is some formality defined by RFC 2850 about what the IAB is supposed to do, what its charter is and such. And so I was finding ties between the IAB and, as you mentioned, the IETF, the IRTF, ICANN, and ISOC, for example, all seem to have some kind of ties back to the IAB.
So for instance, the NOMCOM, the nominating committee for the IETF that recommends new ADs, the slate of potential ADs is placed in the hands of the IAB for advice and consent. It's not necessarily that the IAB can say no, but the IAB can raise questions and say, NOMCOM, did you really think this through? Is that really the person you want to choose? Was the process done correctly? Were the questions asked correctly? Were the interviews done correctly? Things like that. And then on the other side, the Internet Society, which provides a lot of the financing for the IETF and legal cover for the IETF, like the Board of Trustees is drawn from, or not drawn from, but is selected by a NOMCOM from within the IAB. So the IAB kind of has some role in making sure that the ISOC is going the right direction and making sure the IETF is going the right direction from a leadership perspective. It's not absolute control, but it's advisory. It's like, no, we kind of know these people and maybe that's not the right choice.
So it's not formal. It's not binding in some sense, the things that the IAB does or advises about. So let me ask I'm going to ask a mean question, Russ. You ready for a mean question?
Yeah, go right ahead.
If the IAB were to dissolve itself tomorrow, it's just gone now, what would the impact be to the world?
Well, I would say that first, the IETF may run a bit adrift in terms of future-looking architecture and understanding where the internet needs to go. And again, there are specific projects the IAB takes on to try to help the IETF gauge and guide its work. The relationship between the IETF and the IRTF would not be so tightly bound because there are decisions made about whether a BOF should go to the IRTF, whether it's a research thing or a protocol thing, and how the relationship between those two things works when something gets from research, needs to move from research beyond, is something the IAB does. So the ISOC itself would lose a little bit of direction from the technical end and from the leadership end. So it's not like the IETF would fall out of the planet off the orbit or anything like that. And I think it would take a few years for people to see the differences, but there would be differences. The major impact also would be in liaisons. Like the IETF, IEEE work would just simply not happen without the IAB.
You're describing a shepherding or a herding function where you got the sheep scattered all over the plain, and if you want them, gather them together and have them going in the same direction. You've got the IAB that's kind of coordinating, driving people along, making sure the right things are going in the right direction.
Right, pretty much. I mean, pretty much that's correct. I mean, for instance, we had a workshop on privacy on the internet and protocols, and there's a lot to be said about that. And I keep researching it and reading things myself. And that resulted in the PPM, for instance, not really directly resulted, but people looked at things and said, well, maybe we need to do privacy preserving measurement. What does that look like? So the PPM working group started out of that kind of as kind of a result of the IAB holding a workshop and saying, all right, people, pay attention to this. And people paid attention to it. And the same is true right now of internet centralization. And the IAB has a lot of projects going on in the area of internet centralization. Jared Motz and I are working on a draft called the Internet of Three Protocols. And, you know, how the interacting pieces have resulted in us essentially using three protocols to solve every problem, and whether or not that's healthy for the internet at large, right? And the interplay between that and internet centralization and services centralization. So there's a lot of looking ahead at problems that are coming, things people aren't looking at, and saying, yeah, we probably need to go look at this. Let's go hold a workshop on this. Let's write a draft on that to bring it to the attention of the community.
So the strategic focus is pretty obvious, and you know, strategy is highly valuable to any organization. Can you think of an instance where the IEB's guiding hand had a positive impact in a protocol or in a direction of the community? Do you have any sort of stories about how that might have played out in recent times?
Yeah, I mean, the PPM working group is an example. Privacy preserving measurement, I think, is an example of where the IAB played a positive role. I think that there are others, but I've only been on the IAB for a year. And these things, like you said, they're a long stretch. You know, we'll see if we have an impact on centralization. I don't know that we will, because centralization is so deeply entwined in the way things are. There are things I think the IAB should be looking at, perhaps, that we're not looking at right now, but that's what everybody on the IAB thinks, right? I'm very concerned about the V6 addressing architecture at this moment. And that's not something that I've even brought up to the IAB, so we haven't looked at it. But there are things like that come up. The IAB just recently, yesterday, had a presentation on the metaverse. And just looking at it and saying, yeah, maybe there's not an impact, but maybe there is. Maybe we need to sit down and look at this and make a decision.
The IAB seems further up the stack than I was guessing. Based on the reading I was doing, I was thinking this is mostly transport and then protocols we rely on closely tied to it, like DNS. You're talking about issues when you get into things like, you know, certain aspects of privacy certainly go all the way up the stack and beyond. And the metaverse is certainly, you can't even map that to the stack as such. So would something like Web3 then be interesting to the IAB?
Or some
definition of Web3, I guess.
Yeah, some definition of it. Well, that's where we would have to start. And it's not on the agenda right now to look at Web3. But if take Web3 as an example and say, what would the IAB do to address Web3, right? And the first thing would be, do we even have a definition? Do we know what the meaning of this is? Let's get experts, because somebody in the IAB knows somebody who's an expert in this field. I mean, the IAB is just that way. So let's get experts together. Let's talk about what we mean when we say IAB. The metaverse conversation yesterday started out exactly there. Like, what is the metaverse? What are we even talking about here? And then the next question that has to come out is, what would this have an impact on in the infrastructure of the architect? Not just IETF-related protocols, but in its capacity as a liaison to other organizations, could the IAB talk to the IEEE about this and say, hey, IEEE folk, you know, really, you might not be looking at this, but we are, and kind of like, you might want to go look over here, because we think this might be a problem and someplace where you might want to provide guidance, or W3C or all these other, you know, ITU or all the other organizations we have liaisons into. Part of the job of those liaisons is to sit in these meetings and go, ooh, that impacts me. You know, I need to go talk to somebody about that. So Web3, the first thing would be, okay, what is it? Number two, are there partner organizations or liaised organizations that might be impacted by this? And number three, what is the direct impact on the infrastructure of the internet? For instance, if we came to the conclusion that the metaverse necessarily included more centralization, well, what do we do about that? can we encourage the ITF and other organizations to build protocols in a different way that discourage the centralization we already see happening? Can we use the metaverse as a lever to, you know, talk to the companies involved and stuff like that as a lever to try to decentralize again? I don't know. Maybe not.
Is there a line you could draw between technical concerns, more, again, engineering and architectural concerns we'd think of from an infrastructure perspective versus social?
No, and that's kind of the thing with the IAB, is that it's not really technically focused in so far as bits and bytes. It's, or how protocols are implemented. It's much more about, this is coming on the horizon. How is this going to impact the internet globally? Everything from operators. There's an awful lot of operators on the IAB, by the way. There's a lot of operator representation on the IAB. And so we often get into questions about how is this going to impact operators? And what does that do to the overall architecture of the internet, standing against the original principles of what the internet was designed to do? And can the IAB somehow use its influence to modify it or to guide it in some way, whether it's through liaisons or direct? You know, we have connections to Microsoft. Can we get talk to Microsoft? We have connections to LinkedIn. Can we get talk to LinkedIn? Connections to Google. Can we get talk to Google? You know, individual corporate things, liaisons with other organizations, things like that. It's more of a soft pressure. There's no official, the IAB can say no. There's nothing like that.
Does IAB ever become involved in geopolitics or other policy type issues? Or is there any sort of connection there with the governments of the world?
Yes and no. More in providing guidance to the folks in the ISOC who do those kinds of things than directly. More, again, this is going on. You know, the ISOC has the policy folk. Let's go talk to the policy folk and see where they stand. And Ericsson and Cisco and Juniper have policy folk on board that, you know, go talk to government folks. Let's go do this. One of the recent things that came up was new IP. So there are certain Chinese folk who want to revamp IP and call it new IP. And the IAB kind of spawned off a group of people by talking to policy folk and stuff, and was tendentially involved in trying to just not necessarily say no, but like say, really? Are these really your goals? Is this really like where you want to go? And ultimately, you know, some of the groups tangential were much more policy negative, others were policy positive, but the IAB's role was much more of, does this really fit with the internet architecture? Does this really take us where we want to go as a global internet? And then providing resources and a path of communication for the groups that were involved in discussing that to communicate, just talk to one another and see where things were going. And information clearinghouse and stuff like that. So the IAB doesn't directly play roles in political battles of any kind, I would say. It's just more of a asking questions, trying to drag reality into the picture a little bit.
I want to understand that corporate role a bit more. I've attended a few IETF meetings as an observer. And in the different IETF meetings, we're not talking IAB, but IETF, corporate folks that are interested in how a standard is going stand up and say their piece, often in the context of their employer. They're representing their employer there. For if you know, you know, you kind of know what the issue is. Maybe there's a piece of hardware and it's got to go this way, or that chip we built, it's not going to work out. And so they got their territory that they're defending. But on the IAB, even though, as you mentioned, there's a lot of operator representation, Ericsson and AT&T and Juniper and, you know, and so on, and equipment manufacturers, that's not what this is all about. There isn't corporate representation here as such on the IAB, even though everybody worked for somebody. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, there is. And so it's interesting that you even say that about the IETF, because the IETF ostensibly, when you walk in, the note well says, you represent yourself. You don't represent your company. Now, everyone who's ever been in the ITF knows, right?
Yeah.
That there's a bit of bending on that line. People step over that line on a regular basis.
A bit of bending is putting it politely. Yeah.
they build through the socialization process of building a draft or a series of drafts. They build a mini consortium of operators and vendors that will drive a draft through. And anybody who's on the wrong side of that ends up on the wrong side of that. Now, and will generally lose the technical battle, even if technically they're correct. So the IAB does try to even break that up a little bit sometimes and say, yeah, we know we got four vendors on this side and three operators, but maybe somebody needs to ask questions. So the IAB will, it's not an official role. It's not like something that people intentionally set out, that we sit in an IAB meeting and go, did you see that Cisco and Juniper got together against Huawei and we need it? It's not nothing like that. It's just more like, yeah, that's an interesting little fight that's going on over there. Let's go see if there's something there that maybe a couple of IAB members should. And again, it's not even the IAB as a whole a lot of times. It's just that the IAB members tend to be aware of what's going on in their respective areas and tend to inject themselves sometimes. And being an IAB member kind of gives you a little bit of a platform from which to speak, even if the IAB isn't addressing that particular issue itself, is not addressing it. Now, going back to your question about the IAB in particular, yeah, I mean, most people who bring things to the IAB will do so in a completely vendor neutral way. And it's very intentional. You see it in presentations about things that are going on. And people will say, yeah, you know, I work for so-and-so, but I'm really just here just asking these questions to make sure I understand what's going on. And sometimes, you know, that's what needs to be done. I would say it's much less, you see much less vendor orientation in the IAB than you do in the IETF in general, the broader IETF. I think that's true as you go from working group participant to chair to AD to IESG and AD, and then to the IAB. I think that becomes more, the vendor neutrality becomes more pronounced as you move up that stack, if you will. It's not really a stack, but as you move through that, partially because it's people in the IAB are old timers, and partially it's, you know.
I did notice that the IAB publishes a conflict of interest statement. It's just right out there publicly, and you can see everyone who's a member of the IAB and what their published conflicts of interest are. Russ, yeah. Yours were especially fascinating. I believe none were your conflicts of interest. Super boring, Russ. Come on, man. I wanted something juicy, and I got nothing.
Well, that makes sense to me, because as you move towards IAB, it seems like you're moving to a more strategic, more long-term focus. The work you're doing will bear fruit in 2, 3, 5 years. Certainly nothing that can be reflected on earnings reports this quarter, right? And so I guess it makes sense to me that there would be more vendor neutrality.
Well, it's even in RFC 2850. I mean, right in point one, members of the IAB shall serve as individuals and not as representatives of any company, agency, or other organization, et cetera. So it's right there. If you assume RFC 2850 is more or less the charter, it's right in there at the top that's how the thinking is supposed to go.
Yeah. And in fact, when you're nominated for the IAB and you go to your employer for support, because obviously somebody's got to pay your paycheck, right? While you're on the IAB. One of the things is you have to say, look, you know, even though I'm employed by you, I can't really advocate for you specifically. This is for the good of the community. And that's the way it's supposed to be in all IETF positions, by the way, all the way from individual contributor, all the way to, it's kind of an interesting dynamic, because I would say the IAB takes up about 25 to 30% of my working life. And my employer, Juniper, looked at that and said, it's worth having your influence in the community for the greater good. We'll pay, we'll let you spend 25 to 30% of your time doing IAB work. And they don't even know what the IAB work is a lot of times. It doesn't show up on my review. They have no idea what I'm doing. You know, it's just It's for the good of the community. Let's go do this. Working group chairs are generally 25 to 30% as well. And the joke is that being an AD is about 50% of your time. But everyone knows that's not true. It's more closer to 75 to 100% of your time.
It's even worse.
Well, all of these companies have an interest in internet architecture working, right? It seems pretty obvious to me why they would pay for someone to be on the IAB.
Yeah.
Well, Russ, you mentioned 25% of your time is taken up with Internet Architecture Board stuff. So I'm going to assume some of that 25% is tied to some sort of a product that the IAB produces. Can you describe what those products might be?
Largely, they are drafts, liaison statements, and different kinds of sessions or, you know, technical things, meetings about working group meetings, not working group meetings, but things about what's going on with stuff that's going on. Like, we're talking about, should we do something in the metaverse, on the metaverse? Should we do something around, I don't know, whatever it is, you know, internet centralization? And so if you look, there's actually a draft Nottingham avoiding internet centralization and a paper. And we're saying, well, let's have an IAB open workshop on internet centralization. We have somebody out there who's written a draft. It doesn't have a home in the ITF. There are some papers that are related to that draft. Let's go take a look at this and see if we can have a workshop and have these people present this to the ITF community. And because the IAB is sponsoring the workshop, there's some impetus for standard, you know, regular ITF members and IASG members to attend, because we generally put together fairly decent and robust workshops. So those are the types of products that you would normally see. There are others, but by and large, those are the ones that you're going to see publicly. The non-public ones are more soft influence type things that come about. And by the way, I'll say this, all these workshops are open to the public. And in fact, unless the IAB is meeting in executive session, I believe anybody can jump on the IAB calls.
That's I think, a recent change. I dug back through about 5 years of posts on the IAB site, but that's, I think, 2020, that became a thing where you could sit in, whoever, no matter who you were, and sit in on the calls. Yeah.
Yeah. And every other week is more business. We have a weekly meeting on Wednesday mornings, Eastern time. And every other week is more business. So it tends to go into executive session where we're talking about board of trustees for the ISOC and who should be brought forward from the NOMCOM and doing the e-vote and voting on that and reaching consensus and asking questions about candidates and stuff like that, interacting with the people who interviewed those people. So I was on the NOMCOM this time for the ISOC Board of Trustees. So I was actually doing the interview. So we would have executive sessions where other members of the IAB could say, nobody but the IAB here, let's have a discussion about candidate A. What did you think? When they answered this, what did you think about that? So that kind of stuff goes in executive session. Every other week, however, is more of a technical talk, or we try to make it more technical. So again, this week was on the metaverse. Hmm. It was a basic presentation about what the metaverse is and, you know, just more asking questions like, where does this go?
Now, you mentioned the word consensus a little bit ago. When the IAB is making some sort of a decision, is consensus typically good enough, or do you have to have unanimity?
Actually, most things are taken by vote. Most things like appointments of people and stuff like that are taken by vote. The other work, like should we have this technical workshop, those are all consensus. It's just, if there's enough people interested in doing the workshop, and no one's providing strenuous objections to doing it, then the workshop organizers will go forward and do the workshop.
How far away from the working groups is the IAB? Like, do the ADs and the working groups, do they reach out to the IAB for advice and counsel? Does the IAB ever, you know, initiate contact? I'm just curious, like, how far away they are from each other in their function.
The ADs can initiate an IAB working group review. And sometimes those happen anyway, where during the recharting process, the working group co-chair or working group chairs might come to the IEB and say, this is what we've been working on. These are the products that we've produced. And it's never for a go, no go. It's just more informative. And then it allows the IEB members to raise questions to the ADs about the direction and thrust of that working group, particularly in the realm of whether or not it fits the overall internet architecture.
Okay, so there's a pretty close partnership there. It doesn't sound like the IEB is an ivory tower type of organization then.
No, not really. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily call it a partnership as much as a review process by, you know, now some working groups are closer to the IEB than others just because liaisons on the are working group co-chairs are sometimes liaisons or IEB members and stuff like that. And so we hear more about some working groups than others. For BOFs, working group forming BOFs, the IEB tends to get more involved in more contentious topics than non-contentious.
To be a moderating influence sort of thing, or?
Yeah, to ask questions like, is the process really being followed? Are the right things being done? Does this, if this BOF becomes a working group, is this material that we think would enhance the overall architecture of the internet? Are there other places that this should be done that maybe the working group people, the people trying to form the working group just don't know about, right? I mean, again, it's a liaison organization as well. So if somebody were to come something to the ITF with a BOF on, oh, we want to improve Ethernet in this way. Well, maybe the co-chairs of transport or the AD of transport might say, go, 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 go. This is awesome. But maybe the IEB might say, really, that belongs in IEEE, you know? So there's some moderating influence as well. And then we have a yearly retreat. I said that.
It's a one-week. Yeah. Weekly retreat? That's posh, man. You
know, we have like an IETF. So like the IEB organizes the IETF yearly retreat. The topics on the menu and who's going to run working groups and who's going to run, you know, things that are going to happen. So, yeah.
Does the IEB get inputs only from yourselves, essentially, because you're all in the know, you have all these liaison contacts, and you kind of know everything that's going on, and so therefore you establish your own agenda? Or are there other inputs you're getting from other people that are like, hey, IEB, you folks should be looking at X, whatever the issue is.
Well, anyone out there is perfectly fine to provide input to the IEB. So, for instance, the ISOC Board of Trustees, stuff that just went on. I mean, anybody could have sent in their thoughts on any of the candidates. Not a lot of people did, but they could have. On the metaverse, if Ethan, you decided next week, I follow the IAB's agenda. I know somebody made a presentation about the metaverse. I'd like to do a presentation too. Okay. Well, that's fine. As long as we have the slots on the meeting agenda to do it, you get 15 minutes to talk about it. And, you know, it's fine. Not many people do that, but it's open. By and large, you're going to get most of your input from your in-group, right? It's open to other input, but...
Yeah, but realistically, the kinds of circles that the IAB keeps, you know, that the membership has and connections with the other organizations mean that the agenda is sort of self-informing. There's not... And the people you need to talk to, you're pretty much already talking to. You're not going to talk to Banks because he wants 15 minutes to give his 2 cents about, you know, the metaverse and what Mark Zuckerberg's getting wrong. You know,
I think you just, you know, got invited. You just got invited to do that. You know, that's fine.
You're 15 minutes of nerd fame right there.
Ethan's had far more than his 15 minutes of nerd fame share. Oh, but...
It's true. At least 20. Yeah.
But by and large, the IEB members, when they're addressing a topic, tend to reach outside the IEB reflexively to other resources. I just think that's natural human tendency, though. If I'm talking about topic A to a group of people, of 20 people or 30 people or whatever it is, I'm going to tend to reach outside that group of people to get opinions. And so that's largely true of the IAB as well.
Get opinions, surface the things that you didn't know that you didn't know, you know, find the experts that are right up on the latest so that you're going in a correctly informed direction.
Right. Exactly. So parts of the job of being on the IAB are just research.
Russ, there's 13 members of the IAB, and you're one of them. Now, about a year ago when you became a member and you were given your robe, what accoutrements did you pick for your IAB robe?
Water bottles. No. I don't know. I don't even know if it's like that.
I thought there'd be an induction ceremony. You'd have to learn the secret handshake and, you know, and all of that.
No, not so much. They just send you a WebEx invite for the next meeting.
What a letdown.
and they don't kick you off when they go in executive session. Yeah.
Have you had personal influence? Have you had times when you thought, wow, I'm contributing. I'm steering the internet. Russ White is steering the internet.
Wouldn't that be scary? Oh, no.
Why do everybody we keep going towards these icebergs?
Everybody listening to this podcast episode is going to say, no, get off the internet. Like in The Big Short, in the movie where the guy says to the other guy, oh, my gosh, short everything he's ever touched. So I think that one of the things with the IAB is it's so much soft influence and so much soft is that it takes years to get to the point where you are being. I would say within the last 2 to 3 months, perhaps, I'm starting to pick up places where, you know, this is something I can work on. This is something I can actually do. For instance, the privacy thing is starting to come up and centralization of the internet. And there have been a couple of others, Model T, threat model of the internet. And I'm technically a co-chair of that working group. And it's taking me a while just to dig into the docs and figure out what the heck is going on here and understand. So I would say that it takes about a year to get yourself up to speed and to start feeling like you're nibbling at the edges, which is ironic because the term I think is 2 years and
might be three. Yeah.
Might be three, but
you're on the board. You're supposed to know, yeah, but I was just reading about it. And I think it's three, not positive.
Okay. So, but most people are reelected for 2 terms, at least as long as they restand, as long as they stand again, as long as they're willing to take it on again. And by the way, you know, taking on an IAB role was not something I had ever really thought of. Various people have tried to get me to be an AD, a routing AD specifically, across the last 20 years. I think I've probably been nominated in every cycle for a routing AD, probably every year. Somebody's nominated me. And I've always refused the role because I know it's a 75 to 100% position. And I don't know, I just want to be able to do other stuff in my life besides being the IESG member. I mean, it's cool and everything, and somebody needs to do it. It's just not my gig, I don't think. But then when somebody suggested that I jump on the IAB, I started looking at them like, this is like 30% of my time. This is kind of cool. They're talking about
a lot of stuff. As opposed to 75% of your time. Yeah. So you can have influence and direction and, you know, talk to people and provide value that way without it eating up the entirety of your life.
Yeah, exactly. So I can still work for Juniper and do this as well and do open source and stuff like that. And still do this as well. And I wish more of the ITF positions were that way. I think it's kind of a shame that the AD slot is such a high. Because to be an AD, you've got to find a company that's willing to pay your full paycheck and not get any value out of you.
Yeah, basically. You're missing that they're missing a bunch of perspectives that might be really valuable from someone who has to actually work for a living, right?
Yeah, that's kind of my impression. That the longer one is in the AD slot, the more one becomes more of a cat herder and less of a technologist. And maybe that's not such a good thing. More split positions might make the IETF a little more effective in doing what it does. Now, you know, I know Greg likes to fuss about the length of time it takes to make things a standard. but that's okay.
you're talking about Greg Farrell, my partner in crime on the Packet Pushers podcasts. Yeah.
And the IAB is partly at fault for that. So that's okay. We like to be careful. I sometimes wish things would move faster too, but then sometimes I look at things that move fast and I think, yeah, maybe that wasn't such a good idea. Maybe moving slower would have been a better idea in this particular instance. So I don't know. Any other questions? Ethan, you said you had a raft of questions. Some of them were very mean. And
We covered them all the issues I had thought of between Tom's questions and what I got to ask. I think we covered all the issues, Russ, that I was curious about with the IAB. I mean, I started out knowing very little about what this group did and what the role was, governance, policy, you know, how does it fit into things? It wasn't, because there's a lot of these organizations, right? And with acronyms and they're all secret societies and y'all get a robe you know, what is the function here? And I came away with this discussion having a much better idea of what the IAB does. Yeah.
Still not excited about it though, right, Ethan? Just understanding it.
Well, I was going to ask Russ, you've been there a year. What do you think, now that you've got enough experience under your belt, what's going to happen in the rest of your term? Where do you think you'll go? Can't predict the future, obviously, but where do you think things are headed for you in this job?
And so I think I'll end up getting more deeply involved in different things as time goes on, particularly again around Model T. Model T is a threat model for the internet, and thinking about security. I think the more I research privacy and I think about privacy, and the more I understand its relationship to security and the importance of security, I think I'll end up spending more time there. Internet centralization, I really think we need to do more there, but I just don't know what can be done. I feel like we're all beating our heads against a brick wall.
You want it to be more centralized? Is that what you're saying?
No. We want it to be, less centralized. But yeah, I mean, you know, like the Internet of Truth protocols, a lot of the problem is it takes 10 years to deploy anything. And so if the need is urgent, you're going to adapt an existing protocol to fill the need rather than create a new one, because it can take 10 years to deploy a new one. And so there are ways potentially around that, but we don't often take them. And so that is something that actually, amazingly enough, I was in Austin, right? I went to Tom's house for dinner in Austin. And yeah. I actually saw Radio Perlman, and we sat and we talked for about an hour. And that was one of our topics of discussion, was like, how do you do something about this beast called BGP? How do we stop throwing everything at the world at BGP and stop making it the universal routing protocol? And that's not a lot of easy answers there, but it's one of those things that I hope to push more at the IAB going on. So you ask about, you know, what I intend to move forward with. It's more along those things. It's decentralization. It's trying to figure out how to encourage more protocols, how to encourage more privacy, stuff like that.
Can you comment on the IPv6 addressing thing you mentioned very early in the show?
Oh, yeah. I haven't even brought this up before the IAB. So anybody listening to the IAB, who's on the IAB, don't beat me up. But it's probably something we should do as a workshop, is to think through. I don't know if you read it or not, but there was a draft from a bunch of folks who build IPv6 networks for a living, Ed Horley and Nick Braglio and other folks. And they were saying that the lab space and the documentation space is a complete disaster. And so we went into, like, EULA doesn't work the way people think it works. And yeah, there's all sorts of stuff about that. And so we went into a discussion with a couple of folks around Bonica and et cetera, and trying to gin up some support for this type of stuff. And the answer that came back was, really, this is a structural problem in the IPv6 address space. This is not like, let's write a single draft. We actually need to go back, and the current IPv6 architecture for addressing was done many, many years ago, and it was a complete guess. And maybe we need to go back and think, have we learned lessons that would that would convince us to go back and redo things? Or are things defined the way they are? We just need to find, does it need to be retuned? Or is it completely okay? Or does it really need to be redone?
IPv 6.1 or IPv7, Ross?
Oh, no, actually, it wouldn't change the protocol. It would only change what addresses mean, which is, you know, trivial. Well, much of the unicast space is unallocated right now, so there's a chance to make some changes in the allocation processes and stuff that might help deploy v6 faster. I mean, it's kind of crazy how long it's taken to deploy v6. Of course, you know, then there's all sorts of problems that come into deploying v6 because it was a bit perhaps too ambitious from day one. Let's get rid of all nets.
That's a whole show by itself. The future of v6.
Yeah, we should do that sometime in the future. No.
Awesome.
So I don't really have much else to say about the IAB. I mean, people are free to get in touch with me if they want to talk about it or, you know, whatever it is. Well, thanks everyone for listening to this episode of The Hedge. Tom, where can people get in touch with you?
You can find me on Twitter at Tom Ammon and LinkedIn at Tom Ammon as well.
I'm always tempted to make little bird noises when you say that. And Ethan, we all know Ethan's available at Packet Pushers. And Ethan C. Banks.
PacketPushers.net and EthanCBanks.com for the rest of it. Twitter at EC Banks. And you can figure it out. I'm easily searchable.
Yeah, I mean, how did you end up with one.net and one.com?
Reasons. That's a whole show unto itself, Ross.
That is an inconsistency in the space-time continuum I think you need to go fix. Just say it. All right. And I'm Russ White. You can always find me here at The Hedge at rule11.tech on LinkedIn. Thanks, guys.
Subscribe to The Hedge on your favorite podcast service or follow along at rule11.tech.